Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online for Wednesday, October 4th, 2006. The only Wednesday, October 4th, 2006 in the history of humanity. Let's continue to make it a great one. We're happy to have you along on this Glenn Klein online webcast. Our special guest tonight, Mr. Michael Williams, founder of the Gospel Revolution. Michael, how are you this evening?
I'm doing very well, Glenn. How are you today?
I have no complaints, but thank you for caring enough to ask. Well, you know...
Well, you know I care.
I do know you care, and that's one of the reasons we love you so very much. We've got people logging in right now from all over the world. We're very excited to have you back with us on the Glenn Klein online webcast. You know, Michael, this may be the second greatest resurrection from the dead in history.
And that is?
The webcast getting back online.
Yes. Well, I can agree with that. At least it's a resurrection from the right kind of dead to the right kind of life, anyway.
Exactly. You know, of course, Mike is the president of GospelRevolution.com. Excuse me. And that's how you are tuning in tonight, wherever you may be. And we're going to invite you to participate in this webcast by emailing us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Any comments or questions that you have for Michael, webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We've already had some questions come in, Michael, but before we get started with that, I wanted to talk about the whole concept of what happens to a person once they understand this revolutionary gospel. They've perhaps had a religious background, most likely have had a spiritual experience with Christ, and they get sucked into the religion, they get sucked into the legalism in the church, and then all of a sudden they hear about this grace of God thing, and they realize it's pretty much 180 degrees different from what they were taught, and frankly, Michael, what you and I taught. And one of the things we hear as you travel all around the world, people are saying there's just no place to go, nobody to talk to about this thing, and this is one of the things that we hope to do with this webcast, which will be ongoing, ladies and gentlemen, is to have, at least, Michael, a sense of community, a virtual meeting, if you will. Michael? Hello, Michael. Mike's not there, Pat. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Jones is producing this webcast, and of course, being the initial one that we're doing, we are trying to work out the kinks. Mike, you there?
His call dropped.
Mike, of course, is talking to us from his offices in the great state of Illinois. And his call dropped away, as things like that will happen. We've already got several questions in, and we are going to be taking your questions and comments at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Also, while you are on line with us, please feel free to peruse the Gospel Revolution website. There's all kinds of interesting and fun things, and also different ways for you to get involved in the effort, if you will. But what I was saying before was that we are trying to basically continue a community sense, a sense of community, a sense of belonging. And this has been an ongoing effort, and we are continuing on, and that's as simple as that goes, as simply as it can be said. Things ebb and flow, as they do with everything in life, and we are determined to continue to get this message out, which in a nutshell basically is that the Bible meant exactly what it said it meant when it said that Jesus died for the sin of the entire world, that everyone has been redeemed through the blood of Christ, that the grace of God, which literally means the unconditional acceptance by God Almighty, is pervasive for all humanity in the same way that Adam's fall was pervasive for all humanity. Christ's redemption has been spread throughout the human experience, and Mike is back now with us. I don't know where you cut out, Mike, but what we were talking about was that people are craving a sense of community and a sense of oneness with people of like-minded faith, the faith, literally, that the blood of Christ is sufficient for all humanity.
Yes, and, you know, the thing that you were alluding to was the thing that kind of bonds everybody together in this, and it's, you know, it's, Glenn, it really isn't the doctrine itself. Not even the doctrine that we believe that everybody's been redeemed or that the law has been fulfilled or that all prophecy has been fulfilled, but really the thing that the people are hungry for fellowship with is people who are beginning to experience an existence on planet Earth without guilt in relationship with God and no judgment of other people. And that's really the craving. The craving isn't that we all agree on the exact same thing. Now, the issue is that without the gospel, I don't see how people live without guiltiness before God or how they live without being judgmental towards others, which most of our listeners would tell you that is the thing that has freed them. And I think that's where they're looking for the fellowship also. Is that absence to be able to communicate with somebody about, even if you're talking about current events, you're not even talking about the Bible. You'd like to be able to talk with somebody who has that paradigm or that perspective, because it's difficult to even carry on a conversation with people. It doesn't make any difference if they're out of church. They may be a cussing, bar-going person who's never been to church, but they still have their roots in legalism from childhood or just society, because the gospel is the only thing that frees the heart from those two human traits that are so negative that everything about psychology and psychiatry has tried to instruct us not to do what we can't stop doing, and that is going around with guiltiness and with judgment for other human beings. It's a plight, but that's where the fellowship is desired, I believe.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Mike Williams this evening of the Gospel Revolution. Michael, there are people that have not had an experience with Christ yet who walk around with a lot less guilt than some people that have had an experience with Christ that may also have a church experience. What's your theory on that? Why are there people out there that have not had a spiritual experience, have not had what we call salvation experience? They have no idea about God or about Christ, and yet they have a similar take on their overall life because they don't walk around with a lot of guilt.
Well, of course, the issue is guiltiness toward God, and I've always said that it is that a person is much better off not believing in God at all. Rather, now that sounds strange to somebody who thinks that believing in God is going to make an eternal difference in life. But when you understand that that does not have an eternal consequence, it is very clear, and I have a great leverage to say that it is better for a person to not believe in God at all rather than to believe in a God of judgment and of sin, because you are freer with a total lack of any knowledge of God rather than having a wrong perspective of God. And this is the thing that we've covered so diligently over the years, that the issue of the gospel is not that what we know about God is correct, but it's what God knows about us. And so I want to correct myself in that statement that I made. It's what we know about God. It's our perception of what God thinks about us.
Exactly.
When a person thinks, and they've been taught in religion, in their belief in God, that this is the opinion that God has of them, and that he sees sin, and he sees all of these things, these negative things in their lives, that automatically sets you up for addiction to religious addiction, and also to behavior that is hidden, closeted, suppressed, and I use the term that under those conditions, there are things about life then that herniates. It's like carrying around a weight that is too much. And as Paul said, he says, you're requiring these people to carry around this weight that even our fathers could not bear. So So when you carry around too much weight of something that you're not supposed to be carrying around, something's going to herniate. And that's what we have in all of these, I think, a lot of behavior patterns that are self-destructive or destructive to other people.
All right, we're going to having some technical difficulties, Michael. We're going to take a break just for about 10 seconds, and we'll be right back with Glenn Klein online talking to Mike Williams of the Gospel Revolution. All right, this is Glenn Klein online, back online with Mike Williams. This is our first night back on the webcast, ladies and gentlemen, and we're hoping that people are being patient with us, and we would appreciate people emailing us their questions and comments at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That's webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Mikey, when people have a spiritual experience, we call it salvation, and we're wondering what the difference is in what the church teaches, which is that salvation provides for redemption, and what we teach, which is the salvation follows redemption, and that everybody who has been redeemed has not yet saved.
Yes. Well, see, and that's the thing is that those experiences, and that's one thing I want people to understand that are listening now and will ever listen to me, is that we're not discrediting that moment of salvation experience. It's very real because you really did feel that cleansing power. You felt that freeness from sin was what the experience, even if you got it in a church, whether no matter what kind of church it was in, if you even if you had everything wrong preached to you, but you, if you were told at this moment, if you do this, pray that, you will be completely free from sin, then the experience that you had is vital and it's real. The bondage is that it is only good for that moment. And, you know, they always say that this will only last for a little while. Now, the fact of it is, when that person who, even without understanding the full redemptive power of the gospel, got an inkling of the forgiving power of Christ, and they thought that because they did this or prayed that, their mind and their conscience, because that's what Paul talked about, it clears the conscience. So when someone, just like, I mean, you had one of those experiences. I did too. And when you have a conscience clearing moment, whether it's an altar call or something else, then that's when you have come to some reality of freedom from sin. The problem is it don't last. And, you know, they all told me after I had my experience, in fact, I had multiple ones, and every one of them I was just high as a kite because this one was going to work, you know. But they all told me, you know, you will come down. This won't last. And they were correct. It did not last. But it's because the very same reason that the blood of bulls and goats only lasted for a year. But they were told, the only reason their conscience was clear was because they were told that the blood of a goat was going to take care of everything for a year.
Right.
So their conscience was clear for a year. It didn't mean that the goat did anything at all. But it was a point where that it relieved the people's conscience from sin. So even when the church, who does not preach that the people were redeemed before they had their salvation experience, that does not take away from the salvation experience that many of us had, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it doesn't take away from that. The only thing that we're saying is that that moment does not have to deplete in your life to a point to where that you now feel alienated from God. No, you're not going to be on a religious high, but you are going to have something that is steady. It's a solid path to walk on. And the one thing that, and I tell people very openly, I miss those spiritual highs. Glenn, I really do miss them. They were fun. They were electrifying. But while I miss those highs, let me tell you a part of it I don't miss, and that's those equally diving lows.
Right.
That went just to the opposite end of the spectrum, because as high as I went spiritually, that's how low I went spiritually. And I think that the prophet Isaiah foretold of a time when that we would not be going around with these spiritual highs and spiritual lows, but that the valleys would be brought down, and or the mountains would be brought down and the valleys would be brought up, and that we'd have a straight path to walk upon, and a solid path, no high, not any great big highs or lows. And that's where that this gospel, I'm correcting myself saying this gospel because I believe it's the gospel.
Right.
That's where the gospel is so powerful, is that it is a stabilizing factor. And just as it says in one of the quotes in the New Testament, was that our hearts might become established or stabilized by God's grace. So those moments that were experiences, that was like a person giving you just a glimpse of a picture that you only get just a little piece of. But what we're saying is that the whole picture is there, and it was there for you the whole time. And it's just in that, in those salvation experiences in church, you get just a little glimpse of something called freedom from sin, because it's only a momentary thing.
And do you think that's what Paul might have been talking about when he talked about we see through a glass darkly?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure. And now you got to remember also when Paul said, for we now see through a glass darkly, Paul's teaching spanned his entire teaching career. So many times when he would say, for now we see through a glass darkly, I don't think Paul was talking about the current Christian experience on this side of the cross, just as the same as when he gave those lists of people who wouldn't make it into the kingdom of heaven. He was talking about under the doctrine which he used to teach as a Pharisee, a very excellent Pharisee, very good teacher of God's law. But and at all stages, because he says, for when that which is perfect has come, that which is in part is done away with. And I think that which is perfect has already come. I mean, how could it be anything other than the sacrifice of Jesus Christ? We're not waiting on something more perfect than the work of the cross. But that veil is there, and it is all we're talking about is a revelation of that which is already true. In the church community, in the evangelical community, they're trying to make something true that is not true until you make it true. And that's where I believe that the fallacy of the doctrine that I taught becomes so very clear, because belief doesn't make something truth. Truth creates a belief.
Say that one more time.
That belief does not create a truth. Truth creates a belief.
So no matter how hard you're believing it, if it ain't true, it ain't true.
It ain't true.
And even if you don't believe it, if it is true, it's true.
That's exactly right. Truth remains regardless of the human's ability, our human ability to conceive it, or our ability to reject it. It has nothing to do with humanity whatsoever when it comes to the realm of truth. And I remember them telling us, it's kind of, they said that the spiritual truth is like natural truth, like gravity. And, you know, and I used to think about that. Well, if spiritual truth is like gravity, then wait a minute. You don't have to believe in gravity for it to be effective. You can say you don't believe in gravity. You can even express your disbelief in gravity. But go jump off of a three-story building and gravity's going to have its effect.
Right.
So you can't take away by belief. Belief does not alter truth. Truth should, in fact, alter our beliefs, though.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking this evening with Mike Williams on the webcast. We had some technical problems at the beginning of the show, and I'd appreciate if you're listening right now, if some people could send me just a test email. Everything seems like it's up and working now fine, but hopefully we didn't lose too many frustrated people. A bunch of people, Michael, emailed me and said what happened, and I've since replied to them saying that to try again. But if you're listening right now, if you can email us at webcast at gospelrevolution.com. I would greatly appreciate it. Webcast at gospelrevolution.com. Webcast at gospelrevolution.com. We do have some questions right now as it is, Michael. Let's get to some of the questions that have already been sent in to webcast at gospelrevolution.com. Faye asks this question, Michael. She says that she would like to know how hell came to be such a popular theme in Christianity, and how do they back it up with Scripture? How do they get away with passing this off as, quote, truth, as we were just talking about truth? And she says she'd love to hear your take on this.
Well, there's a lot of much more brilliant minds than my own who have studied the history of this, and I would have to defer to them as far as when and where it got started. My goal is really to deal with the current mindset in Christianity, and that is the fact that they do believe in hell. And it's irrelevant as to where it came from. For me, now, there's other people who want to know, and I respect Faith's desire to understand that. But for me, my focus is to help people resolve the issue of hell as it is perceived and has been taught as a place of punishment for sin. And so, of course, the gospel teaches us that the cross was the place where that all sin was punished. Therefore, hell becomes an irrelevant issue. I kind of like the way that Randy Cook, our good friend up in Nova Scotia, put it. He had just been listening to all of this for like the last 3 or 4 months, to my understanding, maybe a little bit longer. And so someone asked him the question about hell, and he didn't have any real brilliant answers to give them. He says, well, he said, they were asking, well, what about hell? And he said, well, he says, I'm not sure. He says, I guess it's just closed for business. So that answer is quite sufficient for me. It is, it's closed for business.
Well, there is a history behind it, and it's a fascinating history.
It is a fascinating
history. And there is information, one place that is an incredible source of the origins of the original or the origination of hell is literally whatthehellishell.com, with dashes in between all those words. Whatthehellishell.com. And Mike, a lot of people have responded that everything is up and sounding well now. So
how wonderful!
We thank everybody for their patience with us, and we'll work out the kinks. And but we want to remind you that you are listening to Mike Williams on the Glenn Klein online webcast. We are coming to you on a much more regular basis, and we will be informing you and letting you know that when we are going to be coming to you via the Internet. But, Michael, you travel all over the country and all over the world, for that matter. You go north of the border to our friends in Canada, and people can simply invite you by going onto the Gospel Revolution website and clicking on the icon that says Invite Mike. And I think people sometimes will be surprised at how small of groups you will go and address, and there's information about that.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's the thing that I take on myself, is that I know where this revolution is, and I know where the people are, and I just want them to be encouraged that I'm here. I'm here for them. And if there's any way that we can work out a time and a way for me to be able to come and share with just them and their small group, I mean, that's where these things get started. We just completed meetings in New Jersey and also in Nova Scotia. And, of course, our monthly meeting, which I go to this weekend, which we need to post on the website. We had to change the dates on it. But over in Iowa, I'm in Iowa on Sunday, the remnant of a group of a church from a church that I spoke at several years ago.
Well, you really screwed up that one, didn't you?
Yes. Well, it's always been said, pastors call ahead and say, well, if Mike Williams comes in, it's going to destroy your church. And I I certainly can't deny that that happens. That is not the intent. But it just seems that the system that now exists will not tolerate the full understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Why do you think that is, Michael? We experienced it at our congregation here in Tampa, Florida. You came in. I'll never forget the first time we ever met. And pretty soon, no more congregation. I was happy, of course, because the truth was much more important than any organization. But by the way, just as an aside, we're getting a lot of people commenting from Pennsylvania and California. We've heard from Canada now. We've heard from South Carolina. So we're up and running nicely. And isn't it interesting that people are coming together via the Internet? But why do these groups, these churches, fellowships, whatever you want to call them, break up as a result of when the gospel comes in? How's that work?
And again, it falls back to the very same simple reason that these people are looking for fellowship, and that is that the system of church, as we know it, is based on guilt and judgment. And you just have to stop and think of how much of the structure that now exists falls apart when you take away the motivating factors of guilt and the motivating factors of judgment. When you have built an entire system that is, and I tell you, we can go through the entire Christian doctrine as we once knew it before, which is the gospel that I think Paul said, which is not a gospel at all, you'll see that it's all based on guilt and it's all based on judgment. There is the moment of freedom from, you know, the service that produces the moment of freedom, but not a gospel that produces the freedom from guilt, nor a gospel that produces the freedom from judgment. You might get a sermon that tells you you shouldn't judge, but the very same sermon, the very same pastor that gave the sermon on not to judge, teaches you how other people are judged by God because of whatever, they're not measuring up to God's law. So that's the reason that it falls apart, is because that the entire system, all of its sermons, all of its organization is based on the guiltiness of an individual and also the ability to judge. So when you take those two elements out, then the structure itself then collapses. It's not, and again, it is not the doctrine. And I'm really glad that this is coming out because this, to me, this is very profound, and we need to discuss this in as much depth as we can, at least on this webcast, is that, and again, it's that the people who are listening, they're not looking for fellowship around a certain doctrine. Their minds are now open to a lot of possibilities, and they now know that they can think for themselves. But the thing that they have been freed from is guiltiness. In my last month of teachings, the number one thing that people were saying was, I look at everybody differently now. There were people I couldn't even talk to. I would just freeze up around, and now I see them differently. But that is the thing with the church organization, or what we know as the organized religion of evangelical Christianity, is it's built on guilt and judgment. And that's where the gospel takes out the guilt and judgment. Therefore, the system, it just collapses.
And, you know, there's a passage that I like to apply to this where Paul said you cannot put old or new wine in an old wineskin. It won't hold it. The structure, I mean, when you tell people that it was for freedom that Christ set you free, and then when they realize they don't have to go to church anymore, that alone, I mean, you know, listen, who likes to do something every single Sunday and Wednesday for the rest of their life forever unless they have to? Yeah. Nobody wants to. And, you know, I really enjoy my Sundays now. They were so stressful back in the day. I mean, oh, my goodness, getting people into the car and going and getting them cleaned up. And you know how many fights must have occurred for people on their way to church? And then, of course, they're sitting there and they're trying to put on this Christian show, and they're feeling guilty. And so here comes the altar call, and here comes all these people coming forward to repent from doing nothing else but being stressed out for getting their family out to a church service.
Well, if you were in a good church, it did anyway. So.
This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Michael Williams, president of the Gospel Revolution. Gesundheit, God bless you. You are good looking. You ever see that Seinfeld episode?
No, I haven't.
When they decide that, why do people say God bless you after they sneeze or cough? And they decided instead of saying that, they're going to say, boy, you're good looking.
So every I didn't see that.
So every time somebody would sneeze, they would say, boy, you're good looking. But we're going to give you an opportunity to participate in this webcast in many ways. One is by emailing your questions. We just got a question in from the Caribbean now, Michael. And another way to participate is just like our friends at NPR. We are going to be taking donations tonight and every night that you can dedicate. For a $250 tax-deductible donation, you can dedicate an entire show to whatever cause or whatever person that you want, and we'll read it over the webcast for people. Plus, we want to be able to take your phone calls as well. Right now, we have one phone line, and we need two, three, four, how many ever phone lines we can get sponsored. It's just $50 a month. Simply email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Tell us you want to donate and provide the funding, $250 for a particular webcast. You can pick the date. It can be for an anniversary, or that you want to buy a phone line monthly for us that we will install here, of course, at the official Glenn Klein Online Studios. And everything that we've done so far, Michael, has been volunteer work and donated by us. And it's something that we're going to talk about later on in the webcast, ladies and gentlemen. And we, with Michael's permission, we will extend past 10 o'clock because we did have some technical difficulties for about 10 minutes. But something that people need to understand is that this thing is a grassroots effort, and for it to go forward, we need effort, but we also need some money. I mean, that's just the reality of it, isn't it?
Very true. Yes, and there just is no such thing as any type of effort that can go forward without financial support. And, you know, if we were a business offering a product, we would want to sell that product as much as we could to get funds to come in. But this is a nonprofit organization, and it depends solely on the support of those who are benefiting from it. And, you know, it gets to the point where that you've benefited so much from it, it's just changed your life, and it's not as though that you can stop and put your finger on this daily blessing, you know, that you're getting, because it's changed your whole life.
Correct.
And so, and for those people, we just ask that you remember. And remember that that there's still an entire planet out there that needs what you have had the privilege of receiving, and we really do need financial help.
I mean, people, you know, spend so much money, and God bless them for doing it, on golf or on different recreational activities. I mean, to me, this effort and this message is so needed to be pervasive in our world and our society. And we really encourage people to get online, let us know that you want to sponsor one particular webcast, $250. You can split the payments up over time, or that you want to buy a phone line for us on a monthly basis. $50 a month will do that. Then we could put more phone lines, and we can take calls, not just emails. But talking about the impact, Michael, that this message could have, got an interesting question from our friend Pep in Wisconsin. He says that you have expressed confidence, Michael, that this revelation can change the world. And he says he believes so too. However, he says, in light of the apparent rise of fundamentalism in the world and its bedfellow of exclusivistic thinking, it does seem that only a minority will continue to see the ultimate truth of our oneness and equality as human beings. In your opinion, Michael Williams, is the world destined to remain in a perpetual state of division? Or in the light of the seeming insurmountable task of turning on the light of God's love in the world at large, how will these dominoes of exclusivity and fundamentalism and the division of humankind ever fall? How do you see it panning out, regardless of how long it takes?
Well, I don't see it as a domino effect. I see it as a contrast effect. And if we're waiting for all the dominoes to fall over, we're going to be waiting for another eon of ages to go by. You see, this is where I want people to take courage in the fact that evangelical Christianity and the legalism that we've seen on the rise and even taking over pretty much our political system to a great deal, is that that's the backdrop. Don't be discouraged by that which is going to make this look so appealing. When you take if you take a color, it shows up best when there is, when there's darkness behind it, and then just a small light in the middle of darkness is a profound thing. So, and those analogies, I could go through, a dozen of them, if we had the time, but that's what I would like for people to see, that this is not something that we're going to have to organize to see that it's done this way or that way. It, to me, again, it's a contrast thing, that this, a little tiny light in a world of darkness shows up awfully bright. We've talked about this a lot in the last month or so, that to me, what we're seeing right now is simply the backdrop is getting stronger to where that it's going to make the gospel look that much more brighter.
Well, and the other thing, too, and when people ask me questions like, when is this going to take hold? When is this going to take root? It's already taken root.
Oh, absolutely.
We have people literally listening to us right now and emailing us from all over the world. And you can do that, ladies and gentlemen, at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Webcast@gospelrevolution.com. But, when you take a look at a mindset and a system like communism that literally almost went away overnight.
Yeah.
And, remember, some people don't remember the Soviet Union, but most of the people that are logged on right now will recall, in our lifetime, we never thought that the Soviet Union and their dominance of much of the world was going to go away. In fact, we used to teach that they were the great bear of the North, that in prophecy was going to come down and ultimately kill two-thirds of the people of Israel. And, of course, they went away overnight, pretty much.
Yeah.
So when you look at just that alone, all that really needs to happen is for somebody of high note or great wealth or great influence to get a hold of this thing and start spreading the word through the medium. And that's what we're doing, obviously, in a grassroots way. But, Michael, it's certainly within the realm of possibility.
I have absolutely nothing but absolute confidence. People may wonder where it comes from because, if anybody has suffered loss because of embracing the gospel, I certainly have suffered great loss as far as on the financial arena is concerned, and friends and popularity, but. But I also, Glenn, I have never in the entire time that we've been doing this, and I can tell you, and I hate to sound super spiritual to any degree because all of you know how I avoid that like the plague, but something has happened in the last month that the ability to communicate this message, the ability of people to hear it, has just multiplied many times over. It's just been amazing, and the small thing that we might be looking at right now is by virtue a huge thing because, again, it is because of the contrast. Don't look at the numbers. Don't look at the thing that is so big as to compare to the thing that's so small, because the thing that is so small shines awfully bright, because the thing that is so big is so dark. And that's where I hope to encourage people to draw their encouragement from, that this is, somebody asked me years ago, I remember they were just getting freed from the law and beginning to understand the gospel, And I would say it's been at least, you know, 8 years ago or more. And they stood up in the service that I was teaching in the session, and they said, "Mike, oh my God!" And they had just been illuminated, and they said, "What are we going to do? What are we, my God?" And they mentioned the different broadcasting networks and what they were doing. How are we going to stop them? What do we do? And I said, "You know what I think you ought to do?" And they said, "What?" I said, "Send them an offering." And it just stopped everybody cold. And they said, "What?" And I said, "You don't understand that we need their voice to be heard. We need them to speak clearly and loudly. I want them to speak loudly. I want Rod Parsley to have the freest voice and the most money he can possibly have to say what he's got to say. Because I want that to be the contrast by which I compare. And if he doesn't have the freedom nor the power to speak what he's got to speak, this gospel does not have its brightness that looks so incredibly beautiful compared to that." So, yes, maybe I'm being a bit facetious in saying send them an offering because we're wanting your money tonight. But I do want people to see that. Don't get concerned about what they are doing. Please remember that that is the darkness in which this light is coming. Don't curse the darkness.
Don't curse the darkness. That's
we awesome. Don't have to rail against the darkness. We don't have to fight the darkness. All we have to do is let the light shine.
This will bless you. I just got an email from Bob, who his subject on the email is "Getting Blessed in My FEMA Trailer." He says he's using a laptop and a broadband wireless card in his FEMA trailer, and he's hearing us loud and clear. He went through Katrina and the post-storm aftermath with a good attitude, knowing that God is in control. He says, "However, the revelation I now have of the redemption of the world, thanks to brothers like you, have helped me maintain my sanity while living in a travel trailer with my wife and dog since Christmas." He says they're building a house on higher ground and hope to move in by the end of the month. He thanks for all your efforts. He hopes to be a contributor in the future. That's Bob.
Bob, we appreciate that. That's awesome. Well, the 100 analogies we could draw from Bob's situation and the devastation and needing to build on higher ground now. I'm just glad somebody got one of those FEMA trailers.
I thought they were all just still sitting there, but I guess
he must have been the one that got one.
God must have just blessed them for some reason.
Congratulations.
Thank God for it. All right, we got a lot of questions to get to. This is Glenn Klein online with Mike Williams of the Gospel Revolution. Here's an interesting question, Michael, about the existence of Satan. This is another Robert emailing. And he says, "Does the Bible literally teach of some angelic being that rebelled against God and took a third of the angels with him to deceive the human race? Or is the character representative of something else? He'd like to know your insight on this topic."
Well, the only insight that I have is that is indeed what the scriptures teach. Now, as to whether or not it is symbolic of something else or not, I certainly don't have the wisdom to try to see into that. And here again, it's just like the issue with hell. It's also the same issue with Satan, and that is, it's not a huge issue for us to try to figure out the origin or whether this is mythology or whether it is actual fact or not. The thing of it is that what we should be focusing on is that whatever that is, we know clearly that Jesus came to destroy the works of the devil. Whether somebody believes he was a fallen angel, or the people who believe that they are disembodied spirits of the pre-Adamic world, there's every kind of theory that you could think of that is out there, even within the evangelical community. And yes, there is a huge amount. In fact, the entire Word of Faith movement was taught that demons are not fallen angels. They were disembodied spirits of a pre-Adamic age.
Right.
So there's a lot of theory. But the issue is not which theory, whether any of them are theory and or fact, indeed. It is the resolve to it. Whatever anyone would conceive it to be, and whatever it is anyone would conceive, we want them to understand that indeed it is true that Jesus has destroyed the work of the devil. That is a past tense work. And
So people are not being attacked by the devil right now. They're not under the influence of the devil. The devil's, whatever the devil was, whatever the Satan was, whatever its grip on humanity was, has been completely destroyed once and for all.
It has been destroyed, and there is only the only experience that person, to every degree you have an experience with the law, you will have an experience with the devil. perceived, real, or not. To every degree that you have a concept that your relationship is with God is based in performance, even if you think it's your believing, that is the degree of guilt that you will experience in relationship to God, and that is the degree of judgment you will have toward others. So when you're talking about the issue of Satan, or the devil, or demons, it becomes vitally important to understand that that's all connected together with this guilt and judgment mentality.
Right.
That's where it's all from, because just like what Paul said about sin, and he said, talked about Jesus taking away or destroying sin, and he said in the strength of sin is the law. And all of these are connected together. And you cannot have a discussion about demons and devils and Satan without having a discussion about law. And the only activating, now this again, and this is where I want to reaffirm, it is irrelevant whether that Satan or demons or fallen angels, pre-Adamic, I don't really care what someone might describe them to have been, even if they were strictly mythological in nature, they still had their effect. But they had their effect through the law. And to every, again, let me say that one more time. To every degree that you have a relationship with God based on law, you will have a relationship with the devil. Perceived or real. There will be something there. You will think he's there to tempt you. He's there to do this. The more legalistic people get, the larger the devil becomes. The larger Satan becomes.
Why is that?
Because that's the strength of the whole mindset of the knowledge of good and evil. And when your mindset is based in law, you're creating these two opposing forces. And you think you're exalting God by going through the law, but you don't understand that by trying to pursue God through law, you're only exalting the negative. You're only exalting the evil side of this whole of the paradigm of good and evil. And that's where we don't want to try to measure good against evil. We want a revelation of Jesus Christ, which is the one who destroyed this whole thing pertaining to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and he destroyed it on his cross. But again, the more legalistic that a church becomes, the more involved they will become with subjects of the devil and Satan and demons. And, it just runs its course. I've done this. I've been in it. And, we've not had to teach people to stop, doing like you and I did. You know, Satan, I break your power in the name of Jesus, and I resist you, devil, and I order you to do that.
Right.
And nobody told me to stop doing that.
What was the last time you think you spoke to Satan?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I don't even know. It's a non-entity to me anymore. I couldn't even tell you. I know that over the experiences that I've had in my life, you know, the issue of sin and confession of sin. I remember, in fact, I think we talked about it on one of our broadcasts. I remember when I got the bee sting on April 1st in 04, and I have a deadly allergy to bee stings, and I didn't have my bee sting kit. Well, that meant I was dead in 20 minutes, and I didn't realize that the fire station was just two blocks away. So when I reached in my bag and realized that this bee sting kit was not there, a total resolve came over me that I was dying. And I remember the degree of peace that was there. Not one moment did I think to start confessing sins, or not one moment to rebuke the devil or to do anything. It was just an incredible sense of peace. And so in those experiences, I can take you back and say yes on this point, on that point. I remember teaching a funeral home director who had, you know, did his own embalming and everything in the funeral home. And I remember years ago, teaching him all about the, you know, demons and everything. And he had quite a spooky funeral home because you had to walk through the big boiler room to get back to the embalming room.
And is there anything as a non-spooky funeral home?
Well, yes, compared to his, believe me, you'd have thought Satan designed this place. But anyway, here's a man who had walked through this room, but I made him conscious of something through legalism. And he came back to me the next day, and he said, "Michael, I know what you're saying is real, because now," he said, "I walked through," and it was dark. You had to cross through the furnace room in the dark to reach the embalming room to turn on the light. And which I wouldn't do it. I don't know about anybody else, but I ain't going to do it. But anyway, he said he walked through there, and he said the hair stood up on the back of my neck as I became aware of a presence there. Well, there was no more a presence there that day than there was any other night that he had walked in there and turned on the light in that embalming room. But you see, the teaching that I gave him made him conscious of an evil force, and he started feeling that evil force.
Right.
But see, it's the very same thing that we're wanting people to do with feeling, the consciously feeling and understanding the awareness of God in their life.
And I think, too, that awareness, the Bible says, comes by a work of the Holy Spirit. It's nothing that one can conjure up. Either somebody's going to have it or somebody's not. It doesn't make the person who has had a revelation of Christ or comes into a Christ consciousness, for lack of a better phrase, it doesn't make them a better person or more redeemed or more forgiven by God. It's just that was their lot in life, just like we were born men, and there's people that are born women, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, well, I don't put the issue of when people come to hear the gospel on that same level. I don't know when or why, but I know that people's efforts are certainly going to help us to reach out to where that people can hear more of the gospel more and more places around the world at times of opportunity that we create.
Exactly.
But you are correct. It is not going to change their stance with God. It's just simply going to be a point of awareness.
And the Bible talks about many salvations, if you will. It's an ongoing process. Paul said, "I want to know nothing but Christ and Christ crucified." It must have been an important enough topic in and of itself to stay focused on that topic in and of itself without any other issues coming in, like prayer, or like Satan, like hell, or whatever else. That if you stay focused on the gospel, which is the good news that we are redeemed, that Christ died for our sins, that alone, like when you had your bee sting, is going to bring a level of peace that really does pass understanding.
Yeah, it does. So again, you know, the question about Satan and you know, demons and the devil and all of that, the thing that I want to make sure that I was clear about is that, number one, is that Satan is totally defeated. That we do know. And the only experience, whether pseudo or real, with Satan, and anyone's going to have, is going to be connected through the law. It is the only possibility that you're going to have any of those things, of experiences with Satan whatsoever.
And the law isn't just the 613 rules and regulations in the Old Testament. We always talk about the Ten Commandments. There's 603 other ones that we're supposed to follow if we are trying to follow the quote-unquote law of God. But
right.
Then churches put their other laws on people on top of what was in not only the Old Testament, but the New Testament as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then they are just, of course, they're, those are social things that they apply, but they make them edicts from God because the man of God said so. So, yeah, I mean, you could, and even the freedom from certain laws are given by men.
Right.
You know, and that's the reason so many denominations exist. They are either adding a law or taking away a law. There would be, think of this just a moment. There would be no denominations on the face of the earth if it was not for the process of either adding or taking away a law. Now, if you did what Jesus did and take away all law, there would be no denominations. Zero.
Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing?
Oh, I think it would be.
Well, you know, and it, actually, in the mind of God, there is no denominations.
Oh, absolutely. We know that we're all one. We are all one in Christ. And I know that I preach, teach, and believe that that is the entire world. But see, religions form around their adding to or taking away laws. And that's just the truth of it. If you look, that's the premise of every denomination around the world that has anything to do with the Old Testament anyway, and also not just in Christianity, but the other religions that relate to the Old Testament. But it is there. It is indeed the focus that they have. I mean, we have entire churches here in America that got formed because they decided that they were going to accept divorced people.
Right.
There's the Assemblies of God formed almost exclusively on the fact that they were not going to allow divorced people to be ministers.
Or watch movies.
Yes. And, you know, so it's just a little nitpicky thing here or there. And now there's entire denominations forming around the issues of sexuality. And so, but what we're advocating is that man doesn't have the right to selectively add or take away from God's law. We believe God's law is absolute, and that any place that declares one of God's laws must declare all of God's laws. I am not opposed to God's law. I love God's law, as we've declared in our post and I've said in the tapes for many years. I love God's law, but I love it for the reason that God gave it. Men do not have the right to take a part of God's law, a segment of God's law, and alter it in any way. And it's just like what Jesus said, but you have to get this in the context of what he was saying. He said that any man that teaches anyone, and see, this is the weird thing, Glenn. This is where that they would use this verse against me, when it actually is an edict against them in the evangelical church. He said that anyone that takes any one of Moses' laws and teaches anyone to disobey them, that they are to be cursed. Now, I don't teach anybody to disobey any of God's laws. But the church does.
Yeah, that's a great point.
The church does.
Yeah, anytime they have one of their Sunday We used to call them pot blessings because you couldn't say pot luck, and they have the ham sandwiches on there, and that's okay. Yeah,
you can't, and I can't. See, they have taught if they serve the ham sandwich on picnic on the ground Sunday, they have taught men to disobey God's law. I have never ever in this gospel. Now, I used to teach people to disobey God's law because I embraced a form of gospel that was not a gospel at all. I have never taught anyone to disobey any of God's law. I teach what Jesus did. He has freed you from God's law. Jesus made that statement before the law was done away with. And he said, heaven and earth shall pass away. He says, these words will not pass away. And he said that until all the law and all prophecy is fulfilled. He said that the law would not pass away at all until prophecy was changed. And prophecy wouldn't pass away until any of the law was done away with. If any amount of the law has been dealt with, all prophecy has been dealt with. And that's where the very same place that Jesus made the statement that any man who teaches anyone to disobey any of God's laws, that's the one that stands in jeopardy. And again, let me say it again with as much force as I possibly can. I have never taught anyone to disobey God's law. But every evangelical church around this globe does. Because they do not embrace all of God's law, and they teach them that some of the laws they can disobey and some of them they can't.
It's a little past 10 o'clock on the East Coast. We're coming to you from the Glenn Klein Online Webcast Studios. We're talking with Mike Williams and his offices in the great state of Illinois. We've got a bunch of questions left to get to, and we are going to get to those because we had some technical difficulties at the beginning, so we're going to run over a few minutes. And we've got a few questions, Michael. Some are going to take a few minutes, but I feel like we owe it to the folks who are hanging in there with us. This question comes from John in the Caribbean in St. Martin, and isn't that lovely?
Oh, yes.
What a great place to be listening to the Freedom of the Gospel Revolution.
He's a blessed man.
And he has a pretty deep question. He says, is there freedom and healing for the homosexual? He says, the kind of healing that delivers and gives one's heterosexual desires as purported by some of these so-called ex-gay ministries. And how does one come to terms if there is no healing? He says, I know we have spiritual healing, but what about this area? And if not, is it okay as a gay man to have a relationship with another man?
Well, first off, to call it healing is to say that there is that the need is there to change, number one. The first thing that we want to reaffirm is that the gospel that we preach is not there to change anyone's behavior about anything at all. This is not an issue of morality-based spirituality. You are no more spiritual as a heterosexual than you are as a homosexual. You are no more spiritual as a non-practicing heterosexual as you are a practicing heterosexual. That is just not an issue at all. This is where that judgments come in. It's when we try to use the gospel as a measuring stick as to whether or not someone has received the gospel or not. So not only just on this issue, but on every issue. It doesn't make any difference whether you're talking about somebody getting drunk or somebody doing any kind of behavior, whether it's self-destructive or nobody's business or whatever. These are not issues. These are not gospel issues. These are issues that people have to work out for themselves.
So God is in no way seeing a gay man or woman in any way, shape, or form differently than the straight man or woman.
Well, if Paul's statement is correct, that in Christ there's no such thing as male or female, how could he see a difference between those two when it comes to the issue of sexuality? It's just a non-issue.
Now, somebody out there right now is listening and thinking, no, but the Bible calls homosexuality an abomination. And what do you do with that?
Well, you say, thank God. If you are a homosexual, you get to point to the place in the Bible that under the law you are condemned, so that you can say that under the gospel of Jesus Christ you are free. You're not free from doing or being. You're freed from having your life analyzed by God because of who or what you are or what you do. That's where the power of this gospel comes in. And the only way that the gospel of Jesus Christ is going to prosper and flourish on the earth is when that the misconception of morality-based preaching is stripped out of the revelation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. People can debate those issues all they want,
right,
as to whether or not it's something that they want to accept or embrace, or whether or not people should get married as gays or not get married as gays, whether a gay person, whatever they think about any of those issues, or heterosexuality or any other sexuality. But the thing of it is those are not gospel issues.
This is Glenn Klein online with Mike Williams of the Gospel Revolution, and we are encouraging you people to consider going to the Gospel Revolution website to place orders for CDs. We're looking for people to donate to sponsor an entire webcast in the future, $250. You could split that payment over time. We'll do that. We also want to bring in some other phone lines so that you can ask your questions to Michael in person. We need people to contribute $50 a month to commit to that, to add some phone lines. And you can do that tonight. Just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Let's get to some other questions before our time runs out. Here's an oldie but a goodie. Is everything that happens in our lives allowed by God? This is from Simone in a place that you're familiar with just recently, from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia.
Ah, yes, Simone and Roy. Good question. I remember way back in the Word of Faith movement that term coming up, you know, God allowed and didn't allow, and this is the thing about freedom, and I really do believe this, that life has been set. Number one, God created us as humans to be in charge of this planet. That's when you go back to creation. He gave us dominion over this, and he set us in this place. Now, the issue of God allowing or permitting things to happen in daily life, I do not believe that. I think it is just another one of the things that comes around in the back door to eventually just bite us in the butt to where that we, because see, if God allowed it, then the mind automatically goes to why did he allow it? And that automatically goes back into some form of legalism. It's an excellent question because it's something that people are going to wrestle with. In my life, now there's going to be many things that I have to share with you, not just in context of the gospel, but also my experience also, because that's how I reflect to this gospel. When I, and again, to every degree that I used to believe that God was allowing things to happen in my life, that added to the degree of the feeling that I was not empowered to do something about what was in my life. The moment that I used to embrace that God had allowed something, or even the devil was doing it, there's a great sense of a loss of autonomy over your life, and that freedom gives you. The power of the gospel gives you autonomy of your own life. And that autonomy over your own life because you have been freed. That's what Paul said in almost a redundant, but it's a very clear statement, that it is for freedom that Christ has set you free. Always remember, there is no higher benefit that came out of the cross other than freedom. And that's not just freedom from, and, you know, we've tried to tell people that meant freedom from sickness, disease, and poverty. No, that meant those promises that were given to Abraham was that God would not put these sicknesses, or diseases on you.
Right.
We're not freed from things happening. You're freed from them happening by the merit of an action or a permission from God. Now, it is true that God could stop anything he wanted to, but that's where that freedom would be interrupted, and that's where I believe that the power of the human race to handle the things that stand before us today have to fall back in our lap, that we have the power to take care of the situation instead of us polarizing everything by, you know, one group being right and one group being wrong.
Right, but even if it is a question of earning or deserving or being punished, there is a variance of opinions, as you and I both know, about this particular topic. But it doesn't really, in the same way, it doesn't make a difference exactly what you think Satan was or even is anymore. It's really almost a non-issue, because the reality vis-a-vis God is that we're all redeemed, we're all saved, ultimately, and what deals with any particular challenge or situation or life is really according to their own heart, and that's the beautiful thing about the gospel.
Yes, absolutely. And I, of course, I believe that it's important to be freed from the assumption that God is permitting something to happen in your life. It's just life.
We're talking with Mike Williams. This is Glenn Klein Online. More questions. This is from Kings Mill, Ohio, and Greg. He says he's believed this message for quite some time, Mike, but he has a hard time finding a starting point to talking to his friends about it. Any suggestions from yourself?
Well, you know, the gospel of peace is always a great place to start. It's a huge issue right now. It's whether God is angry or not, and it's a very simple point to make. And that is that all of God's anger was absolved at the cross. That's going to create all the questions that, Greg, that you can ever handle.
Right.
Believe me, that's where I started. And but many people just start right out just saying, you know, hey, you know, the whole world's been redeemed by the work of the cross. That also creates all the questions you'll ever want.
One of the great things is that oftentimes, whether it be friends or acquaintances or people that you just come across, many people have church backgrounds, and they have heard the concept that you must accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior in order to go to heaven. And I always like to tell them that that's not in the Bible anywhere. And so if you have any level of respect for the Bible, why would you hang your entire eternity on something that's not in there at all?
Yes. And I think that that's a good point to make, Glenn, because it is these small talking points, if you will, that they're huge. But, I mean, you know, if somebody would have told me, you know, 30 years ago that it is not in the Bible at all, not even out of context is it in the Bible, that you have to make Jesus your personal Lord and Savior, I would have run to my Bible and my concordance with a fevered pitch to prove that person wrong. And something would have happened to me when I found out it wasn't there. I certainly wouldn't have forgotten about it. So it is things like that. And any point, there. The thing I've found over the years of teaching the gospel is all the points of the gospel are valid, and you can start with any point you want. There really isn't a favored point. It's kind of like in sales. You know, Greg, I would say that the thing that made the impact for you would be the thing that you're going to be able to communicate best. Because I have, like I say, I have friends that just believe with all their heart. The first thing you're supposed to hit everybody with is that the whole world was redeemed and that nobody's going to hell. And others just are appalled at the thought of starting at that point and say, no, you need to start letting them know you're free from the law. Well, all of those assumptions are right. But you see, again, you're going to be able to communicate best from your heart what has had the greatest impact on your heart.
Right.
And you can't go wrong with that.
And especially if people knew you before and know you now, there's often jumping off places that you can start with. Just based on your common experience, you talk about sales. That's the best way I know, Greg, is to be relatable to people where they're at. and to try to relate to them from their own personal experiences.
Yes.
Okay, here's a question from Vivian as we continue on Glenn Klein Online with Mike Williams. Here's a big one, Mikey.
Alrighty.
What happens when you die?
Well, I don't know. I feel quite confident, though, that we continue to exist. I do believe that Scripture teaches that we go back into the realm of God in what we describe as heaven, and the New Testament describes as heaven. Now, to say what that is like, I do agree with Paul, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. I do not believe that there is a temporary place. I know that many of our friends who teach and believe ultimate reconciliation believe almost a purgatory-type Catholic doctrine of a temporary hell until all the stuff gets melted off, and which would melt, I think, just a split second of that would melt without anything that needed to be melted. But the thing of it is that the power that we need to be pure before God with the blood of Jesus, we don't need a temporary hell. We don't need a purgatory. We don't need a temporary stop anywhere. You get to leave this life and enter the presence of God.
And there's enough evidence with people having these near-death experiences and having very common experiences, regardless of what their own personal religious experiences. I mean, these are documented to the tune of hundreds of thousands of people having similar experiences of basically passing from this life to the next, traveling down the proverbial dark tunnel towards the light. Jesus said, I am the light. And as they approach the light, they say, they experience this sense of pure joy, pure love, pure forgiveness. That I remember when I was a young believer, Michael, I was watching the Phil Donahue show, and he was interested in talking to people who had had these experiences. And he had about eight different people, Muslims, Christians, atheists, and some of the people had become Christians after their experience. And they asked him, what is at the end of the light? And the fellow said, well, it's the Christ. And they said, well, what if you're not a Christian? He said, when you come face to face with the Christ, you know. And, you know, that was a linchpin in my experience, because a lot of these people were not quote-unquote born-again Christians who'd had this similar experience.
Right.
So there's enough evidence that in our heart and our faith tells us that there's something else out there. Even if there's not, this is still a much healthier way to look at life and to look at humanity. There's no question about it.
Well, it's the only health for mental and emotional, personally, for interpersonal relationships, society, nations, religions of the earth. We've got to have a starting point here somewhere. And but to just follow up on Vivian's question, I'm not sure how much validity I put in what people say that they actually, we all know somebody's got a book out about, you know, not just that near-death experience, but they died and went to heaven and sat on big fluffy couches and whatever, you know. I'm not sure how much validity I can put in that. I do know that in my heart, and I believe within the context of what we're sharing, that, again, that there is an automatic flipping from this life as we know it to a continued life.
Bola from the Bronx in New York writes that she believes that most people who remain in organized churches do so, Michael, out of the fear of hell. But she says, when the foundation of love you profess for God is the fear of hell, can that be really taken as genuine love? Great point.
Oh, absolutely. And not only genuine love, but genuine belief. You can't espouse unconditional love when the conditions for not doing it is burning in hell forever. It just, you know, it's so contradictory, it's laughable. It's not even You know, once your mind, once you allow your brain to think just a little bit about it. But you can't even say you really believe until the threat of punishment for not believing is taken away. And I've related this to people over the years that after I come to believe that the entire world was redeemed, including myself, long before I ever became a believer, I actually had a conversation with the Lord and told him, you know, I wanted to take a break. I wanted to decide whether or not I was a believer, because I realized I became a believer as a child in Vacation Bible School, not just on the revelation that Jesus died for my sin, but that if I didn't embrace that and believe that, that he was going to throw me in hell forever. And so that had so molded my consciousness and my relationship with God and people that I had to take a break. And after a period of time, I came back and said, okay, you know, Jesus, I'm here, and I want to profess that I do believe in you. That point of profession, of belief, I still, Glenn, believe it is a vital point. It's an important point in people's lives. The only difference is the profession of faith that we are wanting to bring people into is one that will not lead them down a path of guilt and judgment and a temporary relief from the condition of sin, but a permanent understanding of relief from those things.
Yes.
And from the mindset that is, that as all of psychiatry and psychology has learned, is nothing but extremely unhealthy and in many cases absolutely destructive.
It's Glenn Klein Online. We're talking with Mike Williams this evening on the webcast. Mike from the Gospel Revolution. Just a couple more comments from people. This is from Mike Matzey. Mike, who is glad to hear your voice.
After a while.
And he says that he's come to the conclusion that Jesus did not come to earth to start a new religion, rather to let us free from all forms of religion. He says this has been his latest rant to the evangelical Word of Faith guys that he golfs with. And he says that he has a lot of fun with them. And he says, it's so great to be free. He says, but these guys even golf legalistically.
Yeah, no, hats off to you, Mike. I should have known Mike would come up with something like that. That's absolutely true. Jesus didn't come to start a religion. He came to destroy it all.
Most people don't even realize the word religion actually has an origin, which comes from the Latin root religare, which literally means, ladies and gentlemen, to put back under bondage, to re-legion, to religion. And when you think about it, Mike, it's not even just a question of putting under bondage. It means to re-put back under bondage.
Yeah.
And very powerful stuff, Mike. Thanks very much. We've got from the Philadelphia area, Lisa and Bill.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to talk, Mike, about the second coming of Christ being 2,000 years ago. But we're going to have that as a little teaser. We'll lead with that next week. Lisa and Bill, because that is a thick topic, and it is a phenomenal topic about the so-called second coming or the return of Christ already being accomplished 2,000 years ago. And we've got one more comment from David in Australia, and he's just saying, Michael, what a blessing it is to have this great gospel of peace that we have to share, and ain't that the truth?
Yes, and Dave, thank you so much. And the thing that I'm really happy for all of my friends and listeners in so many different parts of the world is I kept telling you guys you all exist, so now you know you really do, because via this awesome technology, you've at least had a point of contact with each other, and we've all been able to share in a wonderful night.
And this is the first of many, ladies and gentlemen, that we're going to be doing, and we can do a lot more of them more regularly if you'll contribute to the effort by going to gospelrevolution.com. You can order CDs there. You can peruse all the information. You can make donations. You can invite Mike. Several of the people tonight, Mike, has commented on the emails that they want to become contributors and want to have you come and visit them. And we will take all inquiries. And as we said earlier, you can sponsor an entire webcast for just $250. You can dedicate it to any cause or your anniversary or somebody's birthday. When's your birthday, Michael?
8/16.
Okay, so August 16th. You could for that week, buy or sponsor the webcast in honor of Mike Williams. What are you, about 32 now?
Yeah, closer to 33.
Okay. And so get involved, ladies and gentlemen. We've gotten emails from New York and California, from Pennsylvania, from Ohio, from Wisconsin, from the Caribbean tonight, from Australia. Come on now. This is a pivotal moment in our little effort. And Mike and I have all often talked about how we believe, regardless of how long it takes, this message is going to reverberate throughout the ages, because this is the message of God's oneness with humanity and our oneness with each other. But it'd be nice, Michael, if we could see this thing expedited a little bit and get this out there a little bit quicker. And unfortunately, it takes cash. I mean, when we got the technology and the equipment and the phone lines to do this again tonight, it cost money. And that's just the reality of it. I mean, I wish it weren't true, but it just is. And certainly, to whatever degree that this has brought peace and a level of stability in your heart, you know, perhaps you would consider anting up and saying, you know what, can I help in any way? And there are many ways to help. And, you know, it's hard, Mike, because you were so good at, when you were in the Word of Faith movement, at yanking people's chain. And getting them to give, and it smacks of something that we all disdain from religion. But the truth of the matter is, we just want to get the message out, and we'd like to feed our families. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, do you?
No, and the people are generous, and there is a term also that we have shunned, but I really feel very comfortable with it now, and that's people becoming partners with us in the gospel, and because partnerships are valid, and these partnerships are ones where the people are saying, we're going to, you know, put our shoulder to the wheel with you, and we're going to see this effort carried out right along with you, because this is not a one-man show. Everybody knows that I totally do not see myself or anyone as a part of this as any iota more acceptable or blessed or called of God than anyone else who's listening to this broadcast or anyone else who's sitting anywhere on the face of planet Earth. But this is where we are, and we do need partners. We need people who will take this, take the gospel just as seriously as I have and you have and many of them have. We need that.
And we will look forward to seeing more of your responses, your questions. We could spend on a question for Bill that we'll be dealing with next week. Bill, thank you for emailing us. And the other Bill and Lisa from Pennsylvania will be dealing with your issues next week. Let's do this again next week. Pardon me, ladies and gentlemen. Michael, same time, same webcast?
Yes. It is wonderful. Thank you, guys. All right, thank you for tuning in.
All right, so we'll do it again next week at 9 o'clock, as technology permitting. And you'll get a reminder about that. We want to thank Tim Pruitt, our webmaster. We want to thank Pat Jones, our producer. And Michael, have a wonderful rest of your week down there in the land o' Lincoln.
Yes, I will. We'll meet everyone back here next week.
And we will look forward to hearing from you via the email at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Go there and look for other posts as the weeks go on. And thank you very much for logging on. This is Glenn Klein online saying, Shalom, everybody.